So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar, and today I'm joined with our Senior Editor, Sam Rutherford. Hey, Sam.
Hey, how's it going?
Hello. And Sam is not Sherlyn. Sherlyn is on vacation for the next few weeks, taking a well-deserved break, so everybody send her your well wishes on Twitter. Sam and I will be talking about Samsung's Galaxy A event, which we just did a live chat over here on the Engadget YouTube channel. We'll also be diving into some other things. My review of the Mac Studio is up too, so I'm excited to talk more about that thing. So much power in a little box. I really appreciate it. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the Engadget podcast, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcaster of choice. Leave us a review in iTunes. You can always email us at podcast@engadget.com. Typically, we do a live stream of the podcast recording on Thursdays around 10 a.m. Eastern. It was delayed a little this week because of the Samsung event. But hey, we're still here and we still got a good crew. So join us, please. So, Sam, we have more Samsung phones. We have the Galaxy A 53 5G, which looks like it is only 5G. It's not like last year where there were multiple A52 models, and there's an A33, which is an even cheaper phone. Can you give us the rundown? Like, what is new and fresh about these?
Right. So this is kind of like, you know, Samsung's continuing of like kind of beefing up their mid-range portfolio. And so, like you said, that the big thing about the Galaxy A53, it seems it has kind of like more comprehensive 5G support across the line. And so it's going to be available on from all the big carriers, AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon, which is nice. So you don't have to really worry about that. And obviously, unlocked models will be available too. It starts at $450, which is a really good price point. Because if you think about it, the S22 starts at $800 for the, you know, baseline S22. S21 FE, which came out at the beginning of the year, is $700. And so,
did they confirm the US pricing for these? Sorry, just because the stream was just like pounds, right?
Or euros, the stream was pounds, but I did some digging.
It was euros, yeah.
And so the official US pricing is $449, and it will be available March 31st. And pre-orders will be going up very shortly.
Gotcha. I don't see anything about the A33 in the US. Do we know if that's headed here?
And that's the one I'm not sure about. I'm still waiting on more info for the A33. I think, you know, even going back to last year, Samsung has really been like pushing the A53 as like their main bread and butter mid-range phone. And for those who weren't in the chat before, it doesn't seem like there's an A73 this year. So they just kind of lopped off the top of the Galaxy A series line. And so the A53 is kind of your new, like, you know, big highlight A series.
I guess that makes sense. And they just announced the S21 Founders Edition, right? Which that's cheaper than the current flagship line. So I guess that takes the A73 role, right?
Yeah, so that's because of the late timing for that one. Usually the Fan Edition comes out in the fall the previous year. And, you know, because of the global chip crunch, it seems like, you know, they just couldn't do that this year. So it came out at the beginning of the year, right after CES. And that was $700. And so in a lot of ways, you're right. That's kind of filling the shoes of the A73 that we didn't get. A lot of people might have been expecting.
I'm seeing a couple stats around the A53 that were just like really surprising to me at first. So first of all, 4-camera system. We'll talk more about that. But also 120 hertz display. That's pretty sweet. That's really nice to have on a mid-range phone. I know a lot of Android phones are doing this, but I'm coming more from the land of iPhone, where it's like I had to go to the iPhone 13 Pro to get promotion. And last year, it was only the Pro Max, right, that had it. So Apple has been really slow to bring high refresh rates to their phones. And I am just so spoiled by these things. Like, to me, that was a big upgrade. Just like smoother doom scrolling on Twitter, smoother, like everything, basically. Like, all we do is scroll all day, and to have that not irritate your eyes and just kind of look better was a big like quality of life improvement for me. How do you feel about this one, Sam?
I absolutely love it. You hit it on the head. It's just like, you know, Samsung has been really trying to expand that high refresh rate availability displays across a lot of its devices. And so it's really nice to see that come down to, you know, a sub $500 phone. I'm with you. It's like, it's like kind of like, you know, when you're talking about, you know, what do you do all day? You're looking at screens. And so you want to, if you're sitting at a desk, you want to have a nice monitor. And if you're looking at your phone, you want to have that high refresh rate display because it does make a difference. It's subtle, but like, it's one of those things. It's like, once you get used to it and you go back to a 60 hertz phone, you're like, ooh, what is this?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We just reviewed, Sherlyn just reviewed before her vacation, the iPhone SE, the latest iPhone, and coming in at a similar price, right? It is slightly cheaper.
It's $430.
Yeah, it's $430, $429 technically. I don't, if you're like somebody who can both rock Android and go iPhone, I have no idea why you would go for the SE over this thing, because this thing is just like feature packed. More features than even the base like iPhone 13, to be honest. How are you feeling here? Like, I do feel like there's a bigger divide than ever when it comes to like value. I suppose that's always been true for Android, but the mid-range phones used to kind of be awful. They had less build quality. The cameras weren't as good. They weren't as fast. And it seems like we've kind of gotten over that hump. And Samsung and a lot of other Android makers are just like making these excellent mid-range phones. I don't know what the point of the SE is anymore, or at least I wish the SE was better and Apple's entire line was like a little more modern, just like that.
The SE always kind of felt like a missed opportunity for Apple, because you're right. You look, the newest SE has one rear camera. This thing has three or four, depending on how you look at it.
Right.
It has the
three cameras and like one depth sensor.
Right. Three cameras and one depth sensor. And it has the 120 hertz refresh rate. They both have 5G. Okay, that's great. And like, but the SE has a much smaller screen. And I think, you know, it's weird because the SE is kind of in that weird, an interesting like niche that like, it's for people who still want that classic Touch ID home button, which,
right,
it's nice, don't get me wrong. But at the same time, and it's got a really good processor on the inside. And so you're going to get really great performance. But aside from that, not as much has changed as I think some people might have wished.
The design is really like holding that. I've held an
that's
SE
the iPhone 6 too. Design, basically.
That's the iPhone 6 design has super thick bezels, especially around the top and bottom. And you're looking at the A53 and it is a gorgeous like edge to edge front screen, you know, and a really nice big screen too, like significantly bigger. I don't know what the calculus is here for Apple, but okay, very exciting. Anything else you want to shout out? Like, how do those cameras look? I know there's a macro camera now, which I really appreciate on the 13 Pro. Very nice to see that in a mid-range phone like this too.
Yeah, I gotta admit, I'm not as much of a macro fan. I do generally prefer telephoto. I'm always finding myself like I just want a little bit more reach when I'm taking cameras or taking photos. But I do like that they have it on there, and I think the macro cameras to me is like something that's like, you take a picture and you don't realize like, oh wait, I can get this close, and you can get a surprising amount of detail. And so I really like the fact that it's there at all, on top of having, you know, what looks to be a pretty solid main sensor and ultra wide camera on top of that depth sensor. So if looking at specs, 12 megapixel ultra wide sensor, 64 megapixel main sensor, 5
That's
megapixel depth
wild.
Sensor,
yeah.
And 5 megapixel macro sensor.
64 megapixel main means you can crop in pretty nicely.
Right. So even though it doesn't have a dedicated, you know, optical zoom, you do have, that ability to crop in a little bit. And then just to kind of round things out, there's a 32 megapixel, so pretty high res selfie camera.
Gotcha. Meanwhile, the iPhone SE has what, a 12 megapixel?
I believe so, yes.
Just a 12? We scored that thing 80, which I thought was surprisingly low at the time, but in perspective and in context with like Android and everything at this point, yeah, sure. Totally makes sense.
Oh, and
I hope Apple.
Just to confirm, it's a 7 megapixel selfie camera on the iPhone SE.
Okay, gotcha. Anything else you want to mention about these phones? I mean, they're exciting. I kind of wish, I know they're really popular too worldwide. Samsung sells more of these than like the flagship S series. These are really nice, but also like, it makes me wonder, like, why would you even get an S series phone, right? Or is it just are those just for the Uber nerds at this point? Because you can get a really great phone experience that'll last you, you know, several years with an A series at this point.
Oh, absolutely. And altogether, it's a really good phone. I mean, there are some small differences in terms of like, you know, you talk about the A series gives it that premium luxury feel. And so they, you know, Samsung mentioned, oh, it's got a bright screen. The screen tops out at 800 nits, which is nice, but it's 1300 nits on the S22 and even higher on the the S22 Plus and Ultra. So, you know, you're definitely looking at those levels. And it's the same thing if you step down to the A33, it's got a 90 hertz screen instead of 120 hertz. So it's, you know, you can definitely see where, like, you know, those price break points. And you really got to decide, like, you know, how much you want to spend, how much you're comfortable spending on a phone. But I think, to your point, it's like, if you don't want to spend a lot, do you have a really compelling, at least, you know, on paper, phone for under $500 with the A53?
For sure. And also, and like, what is this competing with on the Android front, right? Like, people are mentioning, John O in the chat has mentioned, like, yeah, this is a direct Pixel 6 competitor. That thing is going for $450. That thing looked really nice too, although we've noticed typical Google like software issues around that. But in terms of hardware, in terms of features, Pixel 6 versus this thing, like, do you have a preference?
I would probably still go with the Pixel 6. The Pixel 6 is about $200 more expensive, give or take. The Pixel 6 is kind of, to me, in a different class, just because it has, like, that glass design. You know, and it's interesting, you see, like, Samsung talking about their, like, new design, and it's not, it's kind of contour cut, but then they smooth everything out, and they gave it a new name. And so, it's like, you know, you definitely see there's a gap between, you know, what companies consider as their mid-range, and then jumping up to the flagship level, per
right,
se.
Right, right, right. Oh yeah, Pixel 6 is $600, just to confirm. I was thinking there was a Pixel under, would it be the 5A?
Yeah, there's the 5 and then the Pixel 5A, yeah. And so those, to me, the Pixel is kind of a different thing. It's like, especially the Pixel like A series stuff, they really go for, hey, we're going to put really good cameras, you know, very similar to what you get on like the flagship Pixels. You get a nice OLED screen, and you get a very simple design, and that's about it. It's the A series definitely feels more bare bones compared to Samsung's new A53.
For sure.
Yep.
So in terms of like under $500, mid-range Android phones, this seems like it is top of the heap right now.
Yeah.
How would you?
Absolutely. I'm going to be like itching to review this because, like, yeah, you hit it. It's like, this seems like a really good space, especially for the specs and for the value. It'll be really interesting to test this one out.
Definitely. It seems really exciting. And hey, I think mid-range phones are always a little more exciting than the flagships because it's a struggle to like fit in good hardware with a decent price point.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any like OnePlus devices or anything else that like would be a competitor to this?
There's some more Motorola phones, actually.
Right.
OnePlus, if you like, not counting the Nord series, the, you know, we're still waiting to get the OnePlus 10 in the US, and that's a much more expensive device. So it's really Moto, the Pixel A series, and obviously the new A53 are kind of your main contenders.
Gotcha. So main takeaways from this, it seems really impressive. We don't know as much about the A33, so U.S. pricing for that will be really interesting to see. But anything you want to call out for that one? Because we basically spent time with the A53.
Yeah. I mean, it's the A33. It looks, you know, you're still going to get some manner of 5G support and that 90 hertz screen, which is very nice. And it looks like, you know, we're getting IP67 water resistance for both phones, which... obviously great to have.
Sure.
And then, you know, the kind of iterative software updates. So you're getting one UI 4.0 across both devices, or 4.1 across both devices. And, you know, a lot of the new security features that come along with that.
Gotcha. All right. Anything else you want to mention about any of these phones, Sam?
I did notice that it was kind of interesting that they called out 25 watt fast charging, which is the same as the S22. But it's still slower than the 45-watt fast charging you get on the S22 Plus and the S22 Ultra. So it's kind of interesting to see how, you know, Samsung is approaching charging speeds on its new phones.
I just hope Samsung is very, very careful with all that stuff. Whenever I hear fast charging, I think of, you know, warm chargers, and I think of exploding Samsung phones. So hopefully we're well beyond that. I mean, right now I have a car that I'm also worried about, like, batteries having fire issues. So electricity and batteries is hard. Those are hard things to deal with. So I hope Samsung has figured all that out. And yeah, stay tuned. Hopefully we'll be reviewing this one soon. All right, let's move on to a review of the Mac Studio, or at least my review, and chat about it. I really like this thing. It's a cool mini desktop. It's actually kind of funny that I reviewed this thing right after I reviewed the Intel Nook 12 Extreme, which is basically take the PC mentality of a mini desktop, right? Like fully configurable, fully upgradable, a little more annoying to put together. It's not as seamless, but in terms of value and upgradability, like there's a lot going on with the Nook. Mac Studio, very, very nice. Check out my review. I gave it a score of a 90 because I think it is kind of exactly what a lot of Apple fans, and especially creative professionals, have been asking for. A very, very powerful little desktop, more powerful than the Mac Mini for sure. It has kind of all the ports you need. It has several, I think like four Thunderbolt 4 USB-C ports, but it still has USB Type-A, it has HDMI, just like all the good stuff you'd need. And it starts at $2,000, which to me, that is kind of a deal for the power you're getting, because that model starts with the M1 Max chip, and to get like a MacBook Pro, like the 14 or 16 inch MacBook Pro with that would cost you at least $2,800. So you get a decent amount of power. So like for video editors and stuff, I feel like that's really compelling. Step up to the $4,000 M1 Ultra model, and you just get like a ridiculous amount of power. And I was lucky enough to have both here in my home office and test them both, and cool stuff. Just really cool, like really fast.
So yeah, I want to ask you about, like, you know, because it starts at $2,000, but then if you want that M1 Ultra chip, you're looking at $4,000, and that's, you know, that's a pretty big jump.
But people in this price range, you know, people here who are making their living editing 4K video or 8K video or whatever, 3D rendering, they are already spending like $3,000 to $4,000 on powerful rigs, you know? So like, I think that's it.
Right. You gotta make sure you put it into context in that, like, you know, they actually really are targeting professionals with especially the new M1 Ultra chip.
For sure. And you know what? This has been a rough thing for Apple, because it seems like for years they forgot how to actually cater to professionals, right? Like, what did we get over the last decade, right? We got a failed trash can Mac Pro, which took years for them to like get away from that because it overheated and the design was so bad. Then they introduced the iMac Pro in 2017, and that thing started at $5,000. And in our initial coverage, we were like, who is this for? Like, It's not upgradable. It's not like fast as it should be.
And that's the thing that didn't make sense for professionals. It's like you said, it's not upgradable. It's like, you know, put the computer guts in a separate box so that, hey, I can have a nice display and keep that for years. And then if I want more performance, you know, I can get a new desktop and not have to worry about changing literally everything out.
Exactly. And then in, what was it, 2019, they gave us the redesigned Mac Pro that everybody was waiting for. It's a beautiful machine, you know, really
it's
nice.
It's even more expensive.
It's more expensive. It starts at $6,000 at the base level. And once you start adding like maybe more hard drive space or more RAM or something, easily you could be spending $15,000, $20,000 plus on a single desktop. And it really seemed like Apple was thinking, okay, the Mac Pro is really just for professional studios, you know, like people, industry houses, big VFX companies, things like
that.
Right,
it was like completely out of touch for the normal person.
Right, so never normal, not even like a normal, like creative professional, I'd say, like just elite performance. And that thing was so like so far removed from consumers, like they never even sold the Mac Pro in Apple stores. You had to like, it was basically a custom order thing, as if you were buying a server or something.
It was designed for like Pixar to make like blockbuster movies on.
Exactly. You could even buy it in a server rack. So like just rack it up like you would, you know, in a studio or something. So for this thing to come in with a decent amount of power for $2,000 and for double that power, because the M1 Ultra chip is basically two M1 Max chips like stuck together, for $4,000, all of a sudden, like that pricing starts to make sense. The only big downside, which I noted, is that it's not upgradable in any way. So this is truly a sealed, you know, mini Apple desktop, because of the way the M1 chips work.
Right, the way the RAM works, it's soldered onto the board because it's shared between the CPU and the GPU. Yep. And
it's in the chip. Like, the RAM is on the M1 chip. So because Apple wants both the CPU and GPU to have direct access to that. So it's a unified memory architecture. And the cost of that means you can't just, you know, throw in a new stick of RAM. Also, I was surprised, like, you can't even just, like, open it up and stick in a new SSD or something. And
which
I think,
you can do on the Mini.
Oh, yeah, you can do that in the Mini, huh? That is weird. I feel like Apple's just so in love with their, like, you beautiful, seamless designs. Like, just give me a port on the bottom or something. Like, if Sony can give PlayStation 5 users, you know, an SSD port on a freaking game console, I think Apple can kind of make it work on a system that's actually meant for professionals. And that would give it more longevity and stuff. I don't know if you remember this, Sam, but, you know, in the, like, throughout the 2000s, even the iMacs were, like, upgradable to a point. Like, there was a little slot underneath the screen where you turned it over, unscrewed it, and you could put in more RAM. So it's not as if Apple has not thought about this stuff before, but I do feel like, yeah, that's the one big downside. I will say this, like, when you're speccing out the Mac Studio, I do think, like, the hardware, for a lot of people, maybe the hardware will be fine. Let me just look up my stats here.
Yeah. Oh, and one other thing, small thing I appreciate on the Mac Studio. Hey, there's ports on the front now, which, like,
yes,
fantastic. Thank you for finally doing that, Apple.
Exactly. Ports up front, two USB-C ports, one micro SD card slot, because thank you.
Photo editors everywhere be like, oh, thank you. Yes, finally.
Yes. Remember, Apple remembered ports exist. Apple remembers USB type A ports exist, and I really appreciate that. My one thing is, like, I feel like the headphone jack should be up front, you know, because I know a lot of video editors and a lot of folks are like, well, I'm always plugging my headphones in and out. It is on the rear, and it is right next to the power button. And I'm like,
that's the last thing you want to do. You go to plug in your headphone. Oh, suddenly exactly. My project is closed and shut down.
Yeah, I mean, your system would just go to sleep, I guess, but it's also like that, like, heart-stopping moment of where your computer goes blank and you don't know what's up and if you saved your data or anything. So I question that design decision, but beyond that, like, this is pretty good. I think the really interesting thing is that maybe people won't need to upgrade the RAM because Apple is doing a decent job of, you know, of actually sticking in a good amount of hardware.
Right, and like it comes with a base 16 gigs of RAM, is that correct?
I think even more, like, and this is what I'm trying to, like, look up in all my searching. Bear with me. All my searching. Okay. The base M1 Max model comes with 32 gigabytes of RAM.
Oh,
that's pretty impressive. And a 512 gigabyte SSD. You'll definitely want to upgrade that if you're actually doing work. The base M1 Ultra model, which starts at $4,000, starts with 64 gigabytes of RAM. So You're getting a lot of memory in there for the price, and you probably won't need to worry about upgrading. But I will tell you, my review model for the M1 Ultra had 128 gigabytes of RAM.
Jeez.
And just, like, the raw power in that little, like, 7.9 pound box, 128 gigabytes of RAM, a 20 core CPU, just ridiculous amounts of power. It was it made me feel like I went Super Saiyan with computing power. The benchmarks and stuff all basically make it seem like the M1 Ultra Mac Studio, twice as fast in almost every way as the M1 Max model. And the M1 Max model, pretty fast, like faster than any, like, 10-core PC we've seen. Go check out the review. Go check out, like, some of the benchmark stats. I think my main thing is that it is still a Mac, right? So you are limited to doing Mac stuff. That means no gaming, or at least very little gaming. You've got Apple Arcade, and you've got, like, a handful of Steam titles, which run fine. Shadow of the Tomb Raider actually ran decently, over 60 FPS. On the Max model, it was 30 FPS at 4K, and as you scale down, like, it would get faster and faster. You're never going to buy these things to game. It's more like, count yourself lucky if a Steam developer decide to make their game compatible. Whereas with a PC, once you start building out PC, you could do anything, right? You could be playing Elden Ring when you're not working. And also, there's, like, no access to anything for VR on the Max 2. And if you're working in 3D, I know a lot of people who like having a VR headset nearby so they can actually go in and look at their assets in different ways, or just, like, play VR games too. So I do think, like, these are strictly for creative professionals, not as much for people who want to do, like, more fun things with their hardware, I guess. But hey, that is what the Mac audience is really looking for usually. I hope Apple comes up with a way to maybe use these GPUs in better ways for games. Like, maybe give us a give us like an emulation layer.
Yeah.
Similar to like what Steam is doing with the Steam Deck. Valve is doing. So like there are ways to do it. We know that these chips can emulate Intel processors really well because they have certainly ran x86 apps really well. So like games is like the big thing for me. And even then VR is going to be, you can't emulate that. You have to like really support that. So overall, I really like the Mac Studio. It is not for regular consumers. It is for people who need to do some freaking work. But for those people, this is kind of the machine they've been waiting for. Any thoughts, Sam? Like, how do you feel about this?
I mean, I really like that there's a step up from just the Mac Mini. And I think it just really fills in a good gap of, hey, you want something more powerful. You might not be, you know, have a graphic design studio who's going to pay for your machine. And so here's this thing. It's more affordable than the Mac Pro. And it's pretty fast. I was going to say, would you feel like, you know, for most people, if they're like thinking about this, just stick with the M1 Max version. And then if you know that you have like a specific use case or whatever, where you need that performance, then you can think about that, you know, $4,000.
For sure. Like, if you are working with 8K projects, if you're working like 8K video and huge, huge files, then yeah, you may need the Ultra. But you know what? Like Apple gave us a Final Cut Pro project that was mastered in 8K, and I was able to like export it and, you know, test the timing and stuff. Both models like exported that like 35-second video in 22 seconds. The M1 Max was like a fraction of a second slower in terms of like encoding that video into 4K. The M1 Max was like 2 seconds slower. So that sort of thing, like if you're mastering a big project over and over again, like those couple seconds could add up for some people. But again, if you're just dealing with plain 4K and you're not like juggling the massive files, then, you know, I think the base model will last you a very long time. Certainly like audio producers and stuff where you don't even have as big files. It's just video or just audio. Like to me, that is a better sweet spot. But it's nice you have the options. The sticker shock is there. But if you go look at a PC that's comparable, you know, you're going to be spending a similar amount of money.
Yeah, I mean, even if you're like, more, you know, if you can find one, you can get like a, you know, a 3080 GPU, you know, that's going to be, you know, $700 to $1,000 depending on
3080 at this point.
Right.
Like,
and I'm talking normal prices, not like scalping pandemic prices. Yeah.
Absolutely. Market price for 3080, even the market price was what, $1,000, right?
Something, so, yeah, right around there.
There was that. But yeah. Pandemic prices, chip crunch prices means a 3080 is going for $2,000 plus at this point, even more from what I've seen. So there you go. You know, you have all this power in a cute little box. It fits neatly on your desk. It is kind of big, but it's more like a design statement. You know, it is something. It's like, hey, look, I'm serious. I'm a serious professional. It's kind of like what people who had some of the early iMacs. It was like a design statement. It kind of told you had succeeded in a way or showed off to the world that you were a type of designer. I feel like this is that. It's not like the Mac Mini where you probably just want to hide that thing. It doesn't need to be up on your desk really, or it could just be in a corner. So I will say that, like, as a design statement, it's very beautiful too. And I think it's really cool. Check out my video review over at YouTube and check out my full review at Engadget.com. Let's move on to some other news, and just a few things this week. But I want to shout out the Disney Plus teasers because Disney is on a freaking corporate roll. Got the teaser for Ms. Marvel, the new show featuring Kamala Khan. She's a New Jersey teenage girl. She gets like Captain Marvel-esque powers. It's really cool. I like the comics. I think the show and the teaser we have seen look really fun, and she's played by Iman Vellani. Do you have any broader thoughts about this, Sam? Like, it looks fun to me. It seems like less of a, oh my god, here's another like MCU dour thing. Certainly more fun than like Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I think.
Absolutely.
Right?
This is like the most Disney Plus show that like Disney has come out with yet. It's such a perfect, you know, it's hitting at the like, you know, we're making a Marvel show for teenagers, but still taking on some, like, what seems to be some, like, more, you know, heady topics. And as a Jersey City resident, I love that it's like, hey, it's not in New York City for, like, everything else in the Marvel Universe seems to be. And I really love it. And I also, like, kind of find it interesting how, like, I used to watch Stargirl, and that was like a really wholesome, kind of similar show. And this seems like they're just they're just one-upping Stargirl in a way that's like kind of trashing on the CW, but at the same time, you know, that's kind of what Disney does. So, you know, it's interesting from that perspective.
That's what Disney does. I mean, yeah, they're just very, very good at it. I mean, it seems like they just have so much more budget, and they have like, you know, I think they give creators a little more room to kind of like have, you know, do interesting things, like between how Loki turned out and how WandaVision was really interesting too. Like, they're still constrained by the boundaries of the MCU, but at least like on TV, the creators have a little more freedom than they do on the movies, at least.
Yeah, so, and it
kind of appreciate that.
And it also seems like they're kind of playing with the art style a little bit, or just like the, you know, cinematography, in terms of like, they're bringing some of that like more comic booky effects in there, which I think it's fun. I appreciate that.
It's fun. It's also like, I don't like stretchy powers in general because they tend to look weird, yeah. But we'll see how this one goes. Like, yeah, Kamala Khan is very much into like having a big fist and beating people up. It seems cool. We also saw the teaser for Obi-Wan, Obi-Wan Kenobi, bringing that show back. And I just want to say, it is weird the effect that Duel of the Fates still has on me. Like,
I noticed that right away. Yeah. It's like, oh, bring me that, those Phantom Menace vibes. Yeah.
I'm tired of Tatooine. I'm tired of Obi-Wan. I don't care about any of this. And then Duel of the Fates starts. I'm like, damn it. You got me back in. But yeah, this is Ewan McGregor is back as Obi-Wan, like as a slightly older Obi-Wan. We have already learned that Hayden Christensen is going to be back as Darth Vader, which I'm really interested in seeing because I like him as an actor, even though the prequels did not do much with him. It certainly looks more Star Wars than like, Book of Boba Fett did, which was a fine show that was like a Saturday morning sci-fi thing that eventually like transformed into a season bridge for Mandalorian 2, which some of that stuff was really cool. But that was really small scale. You know, it felt like they never really left the sets. Whereas this is like, looks like huge sets. You're on battleships. You're on like, you've got Inquisitors running around. My only thing is, good God, what did they do to Rupert Friend? It doesn't work. Like a character who is basically like a bald Darth Vader, I guess, or like Darth Vader without the mask and younger, he looks bad. And Rupert Friend is an actor I really like from things like he was on Homeland for a long time. Not so much here. Let us know what you guys think. And yeah, what do you think, Sam, of all this stuff so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think like if you look at like Star Wars shows and movies in general, I think the two biggest like gaps in the like Star Wars history is what happened to Obi-Wan and Vader during the gap between, you know, the main Star Wars series and the sequels that came later. And then what happened to Luke. And I think in certain respects, the Mandalorian and the Book of Boba Fett are kind of filling that in. And, you know, now Obi-Wan is kind of filling that in on the other side. And it's like, I think people just want to find out what happened in those years that we didn't hear about. And so I really, really like that.
As long as you could tell a compelling story, sure, I'm down. Let's just get off of Tatooine, though. Like,
we talked about this.
Bring me like, somewhere else.
You gotta stop going back to Tatooine for everything. You can't have shows that start off somewhere else and then like, oh, magically we're back on Tatooine again. It's a galaxy far, far away. There are a ton of planets. Let's go somewhere else, please.
For sure. So I'm excited for this. I'm excited for Ms. Marvel. There's been a good run of TV. I will be talking about the Halo show in our pop culture section at the end of this episode. There's a lot of cool stuff happening. So, yeah, keep an eye out for all that. Let's move on to our other thing, which is real quick. I wanted to help our podcast producer, Ben Elman, out because he has been on a quest to buy a new MacBook Pro for I think as long as I've known you, Ben. Like, you keep talking about needing to
upgrade
your
computer,
so
close to as long as we've been working together. And then I was basically waiting for, I was thinking, okay, maybe, you know, like MacBook Pro 2019, but I didn't really have enough money, and then like the pandemic hit and all that stuff, that ended up becoming a lower priority. They announced M1. I was like, okay, cool.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
It seems, let's see what happens with a M1 MacBook Pro, because previously it was just M1 in the MacBook Air. And then they just announced MacBook Pro
The M1 Pro and the M1 Max.
M1 Pro, M1 Max, MacBook Pros in, what was it, November of last year? October, November of last year. And so I've been saving up throughout. I've been, you know, I saved my stimulus. I've been saving a little bit every month. I'm doing well. I was trying to figure out what credit card to put this on, because a lot of credit cards have those introductory deals of spend X amount of money. The question is this the best thing for me to get? I would like to ask the chat right now, if I weren't to get a M1 MacBook Pro, what else would I get? I also put it to you gentlemen that I'm talking with.
Yeah, I mean, my immediate suggestion, that was basically because I saw a bunch of Amazon deals that hit this week. So anybody looking for a MacBook Pro, I don't know if those sales are still up, but they basically took $200 off the 14-inch and the 16-inch MacBook Pro. Ben was interested in going straight to the 16. I feel like if you're working in timelines, if you need a lot of screen real estate, that makes sense. The real question is, like, how much RAM do you get?
Oh, yeah.
You know, is the M1 Max upgrade even worth it? I do feel like
I'm not going for M1 Max. The thing that we were talking about is whether or not 16 or 30 gigs of RAM made more sense. You were like, you'd be very happy with 16. I said that I'd like 30 just to cover all my bases, because when you are a media producer, sometimes you go where the wind takes you. My best example of this is Adam Ragusa. Do you know about this guy on YouTube? He makes cooking videos.
I watch all his videos.
So, Sam, do you know where Adam Ragusa came from? Do you know what he was doing for work?
He used to be a radio guy.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember if it was NPR, but he was a radio guy. Yep.
So he worked for a couple NPR stations. Then he moved down to Georgia to work at a university. Mm-hmm. And so he was like the journalism professor in residence at... I do not remember what university. I can't look it up right now, but
it was Macon. In Macon, Georgia. I don't know what schools are around there.
Okay, so Adam Ragusa moved to Macon, Georgia to be a journalism professor down there. While he was doing that, he decided, you know, maybe I'll just brush up on my video skills and I'll start making cooking videos. That's what he does full time now. He has, I think, more than 1 million subscribers to his YouTube channel. So the thing that I find interesting about this is that if I wanted to move into something else, maybe not drop radio entirely, but use videos...
You want to be the next Adam Ragusa?
Well, if I wanted to use videos as a way of promoting my radio work, if I wanted to make high-quality TikToks or something...
People are making those things on much, much lower spec machines.
TikToks were not a good example. But if I wanted to move to more high quality videos, I think that it would be good to cover all my bases, have that more RAM. I'd be paying the Apple tax for more RAM,
context,
but whatever.
Here's the extra context, which I need to make clear, and I'm just looking at the 16-inch pricing now. So... if you want, I'm just going to spec this out. So here's the thing. And the Amazon stuff is still on sale. You could get $200 off of the 16-inch MacBook Pro, the 10-core model, 16-core GPU, 16 gigabytes of RAM for $2,300. So that's $200 off. If you were to add to, if you were to go to 32 gigabytes of RAM on that same system, that would cost $2,900, because that's not on sale on Amazon. So you'd be paying at normal Apple price plus the upgrade. So I'm a practical guy, and I can think of so many more things you could do in your life. Like, if you end up becoming the video pro that you may see yourself as being, Ben, like, and I tell this to everybody, plan ahead for a couple of years with your system. But if you end up like needing something completely different, it is not that hard to sell your computer. Like, you upgrade, you move on. But that would be my advice, especially I come from the experience of like helping people buy a lot of computers as an IT guy too. Sam, any thoughts?
So I always try to get as much RAM as I can afford. The thing is that, like, obviously because RAM prices for Apple machines are a lot higher, it's not like when you have a, you know, Windows PC and you can just throw some more sticks of RAM in there. And so that always makes it challenging. My question is, I'm kind of going to come at this at a different angle, is that, you already have a laptop would you consider buying a Mac Studio? Because that way you do get 32 gigs of RAM base, and you have an as good or even better processor, and you can still have your laptop for when you need to be on the move.
Let's be clear here. Ben's laptop is 10 years old.
Yeah, I have a 2012
Ben needs
MacBook
a new laptop.
Pro.
Ben needs
yeah,
a new
I
laptop.
Need a new
la-
All right, I would
in
need
that
a new
case,
laptop, period.
In that case, just, yeah. Just
go
get
for
the 32 gigs of RAM and just bite it. Bite the price.
Yeah. And that's what I've been saying. Since I've been putting money away, it's in a totally separate account. I don't even see mm-hmm. where that money goes when I put my little bit away every month. So to me, that money is already spent. I was totally okay with not getting this Amazon deal that just popped up because I've been so focused, so
okay.
tunnel vision on this.
Yeah.
Also, and if you're actually keeping a laptop for 10 years, then you'll get a return on your money because that's twice as long as even like most people dream of keeping a laptop. And so, yeah, absolutely.
It's twice as long as some people
keep
their marriages.
Yeah, for many other things. Okay, I guess Ben is going for 32 gigs. I mean, I'm just like, hey, I have a lot of functions when it comes to determining value and everything, so you have crossed over the line of like good value, but it's going to certainly last you a long time. Yeah, let's hope Ben gets to order his thing soon. And folks, if you have questions about buying a laptop or a phone or whatever, shoot us an email at podcast@engadget.com. we'd love to help you like step through things. This is one of my favorite things to do, so excuse this tangent, but I think it's a lot of fun. Let's move on to what we've been working on. I'll shout out my stuff. I'm working on an IRL story about my new car, the Chrysler Pacifica Hybrid, the 2018 model. And the story around that has changed quite a bit because that thing is currently under recall. So I can't even use the EV function that I spent months testing on that freaking car. I have a lot of thoughts about it, though. Like, as a car, I really enjoy it. As a family car, it's really nice. With gas creeping up to $5 around me now, it's like, I would love to just plug this in again. So I'll be writing that up for next week. I'm also working on a review of the Paramount Plus Halo show. I'll talk more about that in our pop culture section. Sam, what are you working on?
So Motorola announced the Edge Plus a little while back, and that's coming in. So stay tuned for a review on that next week. It's kind of, you know, for anyone who missed it, it's kind of like more affordable, not quite budget, but more affordable take on the Galaxy Note. And so it comes with, you know, it has active stylus support and you get a lot of handwriting recognitions. But unlike the Galaxy Note line or, you know, Galaxy S22 Ultra, there's no onboard stylus storage. So you kind of have to get a case. And so it's a little more awkward.
What are you doing?
I know. I don't understand it. My feeling is that if a device supports a pen and a company wants people to use the stylus or the pen, put a storage slot on it or make magnetic or something, make sure whatever that, you know, you're not going to lose the pen and it's always there with you. But it does start at $800 to $900 depending on like promotional pricing, which is, you know, $300, $400 less than a Galaxy S22 Ultra. So yes, more affordable, still not quite cheap, but you know, Motorola has seemed to be leaning into this like, hey, we're going to start making more phones with styluses because for a long time, Samsung was the only company that was doing it. So,
sure,
that's nice.
I mean, I hope Motorola starts making better phones. I do miss seeing some of those Moto devices. What else are you working on, Sam?
I got some new laptops in. We were talking about the Asus Z-Flow 13, which is, you know, it's kind of a Surface Pro for gamers, which is a really
gaming tablet.
Yeah, it's a really interesting idea, but the design is really interesting. It's got a little see-through. I love plastic see-through design stuff. It's like very 90s in a way that I love in the back. And, you know, putting that much performance in like a tablet form factor is like, oh man, suddenly like, you know, you put a controller in your backpack and you can game, you know, play Forza Horizon in great, like high fidelity graphics wherever you want. And that's, you know, kind of interesting.
Yeah. I'd be interested in seeing your review, Sam. Like I benchmarked a prototype of that thing around CES and also handle as like, it feels bad as a tablet. It feels like a really, really bad tablet.
Oh, it's definitely chunky. Yeah. It's a big boy.
It's too big. And, even the Surface, like, you can make it lappable, right? Like, you can balance it on your lap, do some typing and stuff. it's way too top heavy, but yes, yeah, I want to see what your final things are.
Yeah, if you're not using it on a desk, it's like, oh, this could fall over at any moment.
It's a disaster. Yeah. So we'll see. I'm looking forward to that, and a lot of cool benchmarks from that one from Sam. Around in Gadget, we've got some other stuff. Just want to shout out, we have an article on how to recycle your used and unwanted gadgets, which is a question we get a lot. And this is a good guide from Chris Nottis about, like, you know, your many, many resources. Check that out. I know Best Buy is taking a lot of things for folks. There's always electronic recycling.
Yeah, I have like a stack in many, many neighborhoods in my place of like things that I want to recycle, because we're, you know, I'm constantly changing out gear. And so every 3 or 4 months, I'll make a trip over to Best Buy. And Best Buy is pretty good about taking most stuff. They do charge you to recycle monitors and TVs, though. So that's one thing you should know.
That makes sense. I try to like hand down old monitors and stuff, mm-hmm. like or TVs even. Like people like these things. Okay, let's move on to our pop culture picks for the week. Sam, what's up on your end?
Yeah, so I haven't been watching as much TV, but I have been playing Triangle Strategy on the Switch. I
can't believe they didn't change that name. Like, I swear to God.
I can't decide what's worse, Octopath Traveler, which is kind of like the spiritual predecessor to this, or Triangle Strategy. I mean, I don't care because I am like SRPG tactics strategy game nut. And so I'll play anything. And
same, yeah.
I've been having, I'm pretty much at the end of the game, and I've been having a blast with it. The one thing that anyone should know is that it's very much a slow burn. It's really text heavy. It's, you know, very much like Final Fantasy Tactics in that it's like this grand political opera. And there's like, you know, three different countries and factions like warring between each other. And there's a lot of branching routes. So like, you know, there's three or four different endings depending on, you know, decisions that you make during the game. And there's a new game plus. But there's a lot of just like exposition and just like dialogue in between. Like, I was getting like maybe one battle every 45 minutes. And so, like, forewarning, like, just be prepared. It's a slow burn.
I played the demo for that, and that is freely available. And I like almost wiped my entire party in the first battle. And I was like, this game is rough.
It's methodical, and hard mode is legitimately like, one wrong move, like, people die in two hits on hard mode. And so you really have to be like, oh.
And are you playing hard mode?
No, I tried that for a little bit. And luckily, you can switch difficulties on the fly. I tried hard mode just to see what's up. And it's like, this is too tedious for me. I don't have time to, like, carefully map out 8 turns ahead of me. Like, I like the challenge of normal mode. Hard mode is, it's just like, I want to get through and play more battles. And hard mode makes things take longer.
I like the look and feel of this Square's like HD 2D thing.
I love it. So there's some shots where like you get the pixel kind of the sprites in front, and then you get this like gorgeous like bokeh in the back, and it's like it's, you know, someone who grew up playing, you know, 16-bit games in like all the classics like Chrono Trigger. I love the art style. It's one of my favorite things. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's oh man. Speaking of like Final Fantasy Tactics, you can buy that on pretty much every platform now. It's even on iPhone mm-hmm. and iPad. And I'm just waiting for them. Like, just, you're remaking everything, guys. Either remake it or give me like a fully formed sequel.
Oh, man, I would love like a real sequel to Final Fantasy Tactics for Switch or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or if you do the remake, like, give us the deleted story, you know, give us the story of the other side character, main character, and different perspective or something.
And later this year, there's going to be a Metal Slug Tactics game, which is like kind of wild to me. But I am like, I'm really looking forward to that one.
Looks beautiful. What else? What else is up with you, Sam?
And for TV, the new season of Top Chef is, you know, Ben mentioned Adam Ragusea. The new season of Top Chef is out, season 19. Bravo is kind of like a trash channel to me because they have like all the Real Housewives stuff. But Top Chef is still like unquestionably to me the best.
It's still going strong.
The best cooking show on TV. And mm-hmm. I'm really enjoying it. There are only 2 episodes in so far. But, you know, I'm already like trying to pick like who am I going to root for. There's an Asian guy named Sam. So I was like, OK, I can't, you know, he's obviously like going to get a little support from me. But, you know, we'll see who else.
Yeah. I like Top Chef. I was always more into Iron Chef before, and I always felt like a slightly lamer Iron Chef. Yeah. But
I mean, we could talk for hours about Iron Chef Japan. Yeah. That was like a holy grail of like cooking shows to me.
Amazing.
I prefer it over Iron Chef America, but yeah, absolutely.
The sheer drama of Iron Chef Japan was really, really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to some of my stuff. Speaking of games, actually, I've been playing Tunic, which just came out, and that is a cute, like, little Zelda-like fox game. So just wanted to shout that out. That is on Game Pass right now.
The art style for that is incredible.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's like, I always prefer sprites, but it is a very nice, like, almost cel-shaded polygonal style, and very much like Elden Ring, which I'm also playing, but very much like not telling you things. So you have to explore the world and do a lot of things. So I'm really enjoying that. I've also seen the first couple episodes of Halo, the new Paramount Plus show, which premiered at South by this week.
You got to tell me, because I'm so curious, because we've been hearing about a Halo, potential Halo TV show for so long, and now it's actually happening, and I don't even know what to think anymore.
It's been in the works for over a decade at this point. Steven Spielberg is still attached as a producer, and I hear like he's looked at some of these things. It is a really weird show because... first of all, it starts, the very first scene is about rebels, people who are like fighting against the UNSC, which I believe was a concept in the games. Like they have mentioned rebels before. But what's really interesting is that we really have the perspective of the rebels at first, and specifically one rebel girl. And the UNSC is presented as like a straight up like military dictatorship, which they always were. But now it's more like Starship Troopers, where it's like, yeah, this bad. This government is real bad.
They completely flipped the perspective on its head, because usually it's like they're talking about UNSC versus like, let's take down the aliens or whatever. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. So I think that part is interesting. And it's not a kid's show. Like there is a the aliens appear. I forget the names now, but they appear in that rebel community and just wipe everybody out, and there are heads exploding and like people, like it is gory as hell. Wow. And super violent, and then the Spartans show up and they kick ass, but it's also like there's some stuff. I think the action is pretty basic and pretty like satisfying, but it's also like very CG heavy at times because of the Covenant CG aliens, you know, and because a lot of the Master Chief stuff and other Spartans, like a lot of their stuff is CG. If they're jumping or just like maneuvering a lot, it feels a little weightless. I like Pablo Schreiber as Master Chief. He's like good voice work, good like physicality to him, but the writing in the show is kind of all over the place and not so great. I appreciate the perspective change though. Not even a spoiler, but like the show basically becomes the Mandalorian within the first episode. So
I was gonna ask, how do they handle the helmet on, helmet off situation?
I mean, I will put a spoiler warning up here now for anybody who cares, but helmet is off by the end of the first episode.
That's just weird to me, but yeah,
he is just straight up like talking, you know, with his face, and it gets even more so like over the second episode. So they're not doing the Mandalorian thing where it's like gospel, although in the games we never really got to see his face, so that is a thing. I wish the writing were better, you know. I wish like a lot of the characters didn't feel like stock sci-fi people. I'll be writing up this as a review. It's not like terrible. It's just weird. It's coming at a weird time, science fiction television, because it's like you've got the Mandalorian out there, you've got Book of Boba Fett, you've got Foundation on Apple TV Plus, right? You've got The Expanse, and these are all like really smart, interesting shows. Foundation, maybe not so much, but Foundation just looks so good that you're like, fine, it's a fun watch. This show kind of looks cheap at times. It's not super well written, so
it's almost like it's been in development for so long that they didn't have time to like update it to like where modern sci-fi TV show standards are.
I don't know. I think the people work at like actually writing it and producing, like that was not the full 10-year span, so they have had time to do it. But if the show had come out like 5 years ago, I think we would have been like, oh, this is really interesting. Like, look at what Paramount Plus is doing. Whereas now it's like, you've got Mandalorian out there giving you like a full, like almost big budget Star Wars adventure every week, you know, and it looks fantastic. So it's just really hard to compete with that.
It's good to set expectations.
This will be premiering on Paramount Plus. First episode, Thursday, March 24th. Keep an eye out for my review over at Engadget. Thanks for joining us, folks. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find me online at Devendra on Twitter. I also podcast about movies and TV at The Filmcast at thefilmcast.com. And you can find Sam at...
on Twitter at Sam Rutherford.
All right. Yeah, give Sam a shout. Give Sam a follow for sure. You can email us at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts. Thanks, folks. We're out.